yourself living in a shotgun shack, and you may find yourself in another part of the world, and you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile, and you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife, and you may ask yourself,
and opinions expressed during the Drive Time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
All right, thank you very much, Wendy. Many of you wondering why. Why the disclaimer again a second time this hour? But we're having a conversation now. We're going to be talking about politics. We're going to be talking about all the different moving parts of this presidential election in the United States. On the line is our good friend Rich Quartermain. Rich, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me back. How are you?
We are good. Both Rob and I are here and ready to pick your brain about the train wreck that is the U.S. presidential convention. Or,
yeah, you can't turn your head away, can you?
I know, it's terrible. It's like, how many? I hope nobody was hurt in that. Hon, let's pull over. Should we ask somebody?
You know, reminds you of the front page of today's newspaper, eh? The burned out hull of a transport truck pulling hay.
It's like nothing I've ever seen before. This will be, I think, the first U.S. election that I can remember where all of the candidates had a less favorable or unknown rating in some cases than favorable. I mean, there's just no one. This is the classic case of a hold your nose and vote kind of election.
Well, if you're choosing one of the main party candidates, that's for sure. But there are a lot of other options out there right now. And again, I keep bringing up Bernie Sanders because I can. But 43 states in the U.S. right now have already got Bernie Sanders on the ballot as a write-in candidate. So given the split that's happening within the GOP, within the DNC, as you say, her favorable. It's funny because right now she's polling at around 52%, I believe, 52-53%. That's her unfavorable rating. That's also her unfavorable rating.
Yeah, she's. I think one of the for better or for worse, her time in the spotlight over the last 25 years, for good and for bad, for all the things she's done well and not well, has kept her very much not just in the spotlight, but in a place of active, real criticism, particularly from the right, but also sometimes from people on the left. And I'm not saying any of it is undeserved, but she is one of the most unique people in the fact that other than her Senate campaign, which she won over the horrifyingly incompetent Rick Lazio in 2000, she has never, you know, most of her stuff and her positions have been appointed.
Yep.
So it's very rare to see a person along these lines.
That's the thing, too, because people always point to her experience. Oh, she's the most experienced presidential candidate ever. Well, she has been in the room when decisions have been made. She was in the Senate for a single term, if I remember correctly. She didn't get a lot done.
Not even quite a single term, because she eventually wound up being... she was single term and changed, and then she was elevated Secretary of State.
Right. So, again, I mean, she has this wonderful record where she talks about women's rights and all of this other stuff internationally. But on the domestic stage, she hasn't actually echoed that.
But I think there's something different about her in the sense that she has been very much oriented towards being I would consider her a person of service to the country rather than a public person. She's not a public kind of person. And one of the things that I noticed, I heard a really good interview with Joan Walsh, a journalist from The Nation, and also a friend of Clinton's and a feminist. And she was talking about how the public really doesn't know Clinton very well. And that's because a lot of the work that she's done is very quiet, very activist, on-the-ground oriented stuff. And that really Americans are starting to get to know her for the first time. And I think sometimes we associate that with not having done anything very public or legislatively that would draw attention to herself. And yet she's done this incredible work. And I think if you go back and look at her record sort of on the ground, she has a lifetime of doing this kind of work. So I think we have yet to really meet the Hillary Clinton who we're going to vote for, or not us, but I mean who Americans are going to vote for come November. And I think that's a big thing. I don't know. What do you think, Rich?
My personal opinion is the best thing Hillary Clinton can do, well, other than being not Donald Trump, which is in and of itself a plus one for her, but the strongest thing she can do, I think, and this is something that she's, to show off the women's rights stuff that she has legitimately done throughout the world. I think that's a winning play for her. And the other thing that I think she really, 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 really needs to get on top of, and I read this earlier today in The Atlantic, which is a fantastic magazine if you get a chance to read that, on a whole variety of issues.
Yep.
One of the things she's been losing ground on, in a way she should not, is one of the strongest Democratic planks has always been investment infrastructure. And they've owned that plank since the 1930s, since the Great Depression and the New Deal and coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
And she has not been particularly strong. And this is something that I think she can actually really win on, because Donald Trump infrastructure is, well, you know, just look at his casinos in Atlantic City.
Well, she did include infrastructure in her speech, though, in her nomination speech. When she accepted the nomination, she talked about investing in infrastructure.
Yep.
That was a huge part, actually, of what she talked about.
But every candidate says that. The question is, she's got to really hit home with that, because that brings two things to bear. Not only is traditional investment in infrastructure very important to the Democratic Party as a whole, one of the biggest backers historically, certainly in the last 40 years, of the Democratic Party has been the labor union vote.
Mm-hmm.
Labor unions in particular have been kind of a little bit battered, particularly the blue-collar unions, in the last 40 years.
Yeah, but didn't they back Reagan, though? I mean, wasn't that sort of the beginning of the death knell for organized labor in the U.S., was them backing Ronald Reagan?
Even before, that was kind of a split. Depends on where you were. Going all the way back, actually, to 1975, if you look at the economic statistics, was the high point of U.S. blue-collar manufacturing and extraction as a percentage of the economy. That was close to 43% of the U.S. labor force. After that point, there became, one, as the information economy shifted into high gear, there was a movement, a structural movement away from labor unionism. The biggest problem is that the labor unions were very, very, very late to pick up on high-end service labor, nurses, as an example. And I'm not talking the people who are on the lower ranks of hospitals, but skilled nursing services and things like that. They didn't pick up on a lot of these growth opportunities that the unions have had. But to get back to the infrastructural argument, one of the strongest unions in front of the Democratic on a national level is the Service Employees International Union, which also happens to have a lot of the public engineers unions. These are some of the higher end white collar parts of government that are also unionized, that also do a lot of the infrastructure planning and development.
So you're saying she needs to get them on side, and she hasn't as yet?
She hasn't really. I think they will eventually vote for her, but this is a kind of case where she could make cause, and I don't think she's quite made the cause yet that will rally the energy that in front of that. I don't think she's there yet.
What are we talking about in terms of votes? I mean, you know, does she not have a larger responsibility to, you know, women in the U.S.? Does she not have a greater responsibility to African-Americans, to Hispanic-Americans? I mean, there's a lot of people getting hit pretty hard. While I understand your point about labor, that makes a lot of sense to me as a whole. But, you know, when we start talking about, you know, oh, she needs a good infrastructure program just so she can get a couple of engineers to vote for, that doesn't make much sense to me, Rich. I think what we're talking about here is Hillary Clinton's in an amazing place. First woman to be nominated by a major political party to run for president. This is historic. Women bring a different kind of politics to the table, and I think that's what makes her unique. I don't think she needs to pander in the same way that, say, a male candidate would need to these kinds of minority interests. I think what she can do is she can reach out there and she can build a whole new cohort based on the groups that I just talked about. I mean, those are the people that she needs to appeal to. Because let's be honest, Rich, this is going to come down to four states. Is it not? Isn't it going to come down? It's going to be all about Florida. It's going to be about Ohio. It's going to be about Virginia. And it's going to be about Pennsylvania. I mean, that's what it's been for the last couple of elections. This is what we're talking about. We're not talking about a small sector of the professional working class.
Now this is where I'm going to probably give you some of this. The particularly the white collar union vote under the SEIU, not only has it grown tremendously in the past 15, 16 years as an interesting dynamic, but it is also extremely strong in the states you mentioned, except for Florida. It is extremely strong in the states you mentioned, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia. Virginia has tons of government workers from Washington. Ohio has a very high percentage of unionized labor. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Ohio actually has the highest percentage of unionized labor in the nation as a percentage of total workforce.
So we're trying. So you're saying that she needs to get the support of organized labor on board in order to win her victory. But I mean, given her track record, not just in the Senate, but even in her private life, I mean, she hasn't exactly been a strong supporter of working class Americans. She really hasn't. She has a track record out there. I mean, one of the biggest problems she has with Bernie Sanders supporters, for instance, the 49% say they're not going to support her, is because she is the corporatocracy's girl. Right? Let's face it. She's been on the board of many corporations. She still hasn't released her speeches to Wall Street yet. She hasn't talked about any of that. I mean, we can talk about her alleged strengths, and which are probably numerous. But the problem is that, you know how it works in the media. I mean, if it bleeds, it leads. And right now, she has not built up the credibility with voters. I mean, this is why her disapproval ratings are so high. People just don't trust Hillary Clinton.
But I think they're going to be learning about her. I mean, I think that's what this campaign's going to really do for her. Part of it's going to be the unfolding of who this really is. And like I said before, I think there is a gap there between who is she really and who is the demon that the Republican Party has put up as a mask to cover up some of the work she's doing. I think that's part of it. But I also, you know, let's look at Trump's campaign. Trump's campaign is appealing to the white and blue collar workers who are disenfranchised, and these are the ones that are Rust Belt workers, like you described, Rich. Who I think he's trying to go after the same group, and I don't think it breaks down in terms of the labor. Maybe you and I are disagreeing on this, and I just submit it respectfully to you that maybe they're going after the same kettle. Both sides: Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, maybe Colorado. But I think Trump's in trouble because, you know, he's upset black voters, he's upset Hispanics, and, you know, when you look at states,
he's upset
like,
Republicans.
Well, yeah, well, that too. But Virginia, Colorado, they have large Hispanic populations. North Carolina, huge black, university-educated people. They hate Trump. So I don't know where he's going to get his traction, but those are the same people that you're describing when you're talking about Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. No. Well, hold on. One of the things I want to differentiate is Trump in particular has seeded something that, according to a couple polls, he is behind among white college-educated groups, which is the first time the Republicans have been behind this late in the day amongst white college-educated. What Trump has brought in is the angry, white, older, blue-collar voter, sometimes maybe retired as well. And what I'm kind of stressing is this is a different group. When I'm referring to the upper end of organized labor, they carry a very outsized weight in terms of not only their organizing skills and their money, a lot of other things, but this is also a very educated group. It's a little bit, I want to draw the distinction there. This isn't a group that Trump is polling well with. They offer a very outsized and very strong-spoken group that Trump has alienated. As for, and you make a good point about black Americans and Latinos and Latinas, that is a very strong group that I think is going to vote solidly for Hillary. I think your black vote will probably approach 95% for Hillary. It won't be the same energy as President Obama had, or even Mrs. Clinton's husband back in 92, who did have a lot of re-energization of the black vote, which had kind of had been receding from both sides pretty much since about 1972, but it picked back up, particularly in Clinton and then later on, certainly for President Obama. It's the same thing with when Trump, for some odd reason, decided to attack a judge of Mexican descent, which to me, I don't even remotely fathom as to why he did it. But you're probably easily, Clinton is going to poll over 70% in the Latino group, if not more, and probably close on 95% of black Americans, which are solid voting groups. In this case, when we're looking at purple states, where you can turn the vote on very small amounts, as we all know, George W. Bush won Florida, however you want to view that victory, tainted or otherwise, by a mere 572 votes. So these kind of little differences, the whole reason why I like to look at these purple states where there's some outsized strength in certain voting segments is because I think it's very important for, as a whole on the Canadian show, for Canadians who listen in, first of all, thank you. And second of all, one of the things to understand is there are certain groups whose electoral weight by personal, in terms of their voting, one, the fervor with which they vote, and two, by percentage of cohort, in other words, they vote very heavily. And these upper side of the union vote, both the labor union leaders and the educated people who now belong in the service employees unions, and the upper end, even the upper end of blue-collar unions, like engineering-type unions, these carry a very outsized value and money vote within the Democratic Party. And that's what I'm getting at very specifically, because while it's always the credo that one person, one vote, the reality is that the people with an organized, passionate base with money behind it always carry greater weight and drag.
Well, because they can get out the vote, though. But I guess what your point is, though, is that they can get out the vote, right?
Yes, they can
get people together. They can, you know, bring their friends, their family. There's a large section of the population that feels disenfranchised. They have a little difficult time getting out to vote. I want to talk about that in just a moment. We're going to take our first break of this segment. When we come back, we're going to talk about that because there have been a lot of complaints about the DNC and about the RNC as well, about people who are disenfranchised. People who have been kicked off the voting rolls, the new rules with regards to voting rights in the U.S., all of that is going to have a huge factor in this presidential election. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation on the U.S. presidential election. I'm Dave Glover. My guest in studio, Rob Washburn, for our weekly installment of Consider This Live. And Rich Quartermain is on the line, so we'll be right back.
Rock and roll has got to go.
They're even organizing a group to fight rock and roll.
This rock and roll is the musical noise symptomatic of a decadent and irresponsible youth.
I've been looking into this rock and roll stuff, and believe me, what I see disgusts me.
Tune in every Saturday night at 7 p.m. as we focus on the history of rock and roll. We'll hear from the stars that made it famous and the people who were there from 1952 to 1977. The history of rock and roll right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
It's time for a jailbreak. Ahoy, matey! The Jailhouse Tavern's gone fishing and locked in some great deals for your family every day. Halibut or haddock fish and chips available every day. Monday night is fish night. Get beer-battered haddock and fries with slaw, only $10. And for seafood lovers, there's salmon, shrimp, and fish tacos. Best, biggest patio. Eat in or take out. The Jailhouse rocks. 77 Albert Street. For takeout or reservations, call 289-252-1913 and online at thejailhouse.ca.
Northumberland Security has provided security solutions for over 38 years. From transponder car keys, alarm systems, surveillance systems, and handicapped door operators, they cover Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Northumberland Security prides itself on providing a comprehensive selection of personal and property protection at affordable prices with fast, courteous, and reliable 24-hour service. Located at 22 King Street West, Coburg. Call 905-372-8951 or visit NorthumberlandSecurity.com, the professional security team.
How is Northumberland 89.7 truly local radio? We reflect the diverse interests of this area with unique and varied programs hosted by people who live in our community. Check out our complete programming schedule at Northumberland89.7.ca.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guest on the line is Rich Quartermain. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Dave.
I guess, you know, we've been talking about Hillary and we've been talking about, a lot about Hillary, frankly. The thing that a lot of people are getting frustrated with, it seems to be anyway, and I think this is to your point of why she needs to focus on certain issues and get those out there in front. I mean, right now, the only thing she is offering, and I've talked to a lot of Democrats about this, people who are frustrated with her campaign, simply because what she is offering right now is that she's not Trump.
Yeah.
And Trump is offering to his constituents, well, I'm not Hillary Clinton. I'm not crooked Hillary. And she's saying I'm not lying Donald Trump. But the reality is neither one of them are offering anything that's substantial. That's concrete. She's talking about picking up the mantle from Obama and continuing with his legacy. But let's face it, his legacy has been one of roadblock after roadblock after roadblock because of the Congress. Right. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really been able to get much done. Hillary Clinton, of course, she talks about her husband's record. And of course, you know, black Americans look at her husband's record, too, and look at the number of incarcerations that have happened. I mean, you know, and some of the things that she said about that, whereas Donald Trump offers nothing but insane. And there's no other way of putting it, insane hyperbole.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, in order to garner votes, in order to get their numbers back from the disapproval numbers that they are, as I say, Clinton's at 53% right now, and that's her unfavorable rating as well. It's pretty close to that. So, Rob wants to throw something in here, though. Very important points about the process.
Well, I was just going to, just on your point, Dave, before we go into that, you know, Trump's been talking about three things: trade, terrorism, and immigration. I mean, now those are the three things that I think he's hoping that'll carry him to the White House. And last time we spoke, Rich, you'll recall one of the points that I kept making was, we need some positive things. We need a message of hope here. We need a message that's going to reach out and give people something to believe in and not something to vote against. And I think that's really important. But what I was going to explain, and I think, Rich, this is, I think, what you were sort of talking about as well in a different way, was the way that the system in the states is different from our system is that they're interested in electoral votes. They're not like here, we're interested in winning ridings and then, you know, we have a leader, et cetera, et cetera. Down there, it's about electoral votes. And there, I believe there's 270 electoral votes up for grabs. Clinton, right at the moment, has about 202, and Trump has got about 164 from the information I was able to find out. And there's about 172 of the 270 that are really up for grabs. And you know, Florida's key, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia, we've talked about, of course, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. Those are places that Trump's eyeing right now, sort of the Rust Belt states. And I think that was more to what you were talking about, sort of the older white, blue-collar workers that Trump wants to get to vote him because they feel so disenfranchised.
Right. And there's something that's a great point. Also, there is, by the way, to just today, 10 very conservative state representatives in Kansas were turned out by the Republican Party to a more moderate group. Kansas is a very interesting state because it's not as cut and dry red as, say, Oklahoma is. So it'd be something that might be a bellwether election. But to return to the presidential part, people, when you elect in Canada a prime minister, he or she is the leader of a party, typically is elected to parliament and then serves as its leader and therefore as prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S., because of the way the Constitution is, they're very separate and distinct groups. You elect a president by way of the Electoral College. 270 mm-hmm. votes is what you need to win.
Yep.
And then aside of that, there are a number of opportunities to win local ridings or congressional districts, as they're called in the U.S. And what's going to be interesting, and Dave pointed this out, how many can Clinton, if she were to win, carry any, because of the traction in Congress that President Obama faced for his last 6 years, can they carry enough on her coattails, should she win, to bring in more Democratic people? Because one of the things that I think, from a Bernie Sanders perspective, as his movement disperses into the rest of the United States, this movement for, you know, what he views to be a better and fairer system, one of the things is he now has to sort of rally people like a Sherrod Brown, who's a senator in Ohio, who's also in kind of the Bernie camp, or other people. And I think that's really important that Democrats who may be listening to the show, or people who know Democrats that are listening to the show, say is that Congress, you know, almost 90% of Congress
mm-hmm.
is up for election this year.
86%.
Very intractable.
Well, that's a huge part. That's a huge part of what we're talking about today as well, because it's, as the president tweeted out yesterday, it's not just everyone's focused on the presidency, but 86% of Congress is up for re-election this year. And the reality is, and something that Bernie Sanders talked about as well, is these what they call down ballot candidates. Can they garner enough support? Because typically what happens is you'll get a strong party candidate, and then everyone in the, it will just jump on board with the other so-called party candidates, you know, whether it be congressional, local, state, and municipal governments, whatever. It's a Republican or it's a Democrat. But what Bernie Sanders talked about, and this is something that's happening across the United States, because Bernie talked about this when he decided that he was going to support Hillary, that he was urging his supporters to find down-ballot candidates that were like him, who were willing to do what he wanted to do, because as he said, he's going to go back to the Senate. He can't do it alone. He and Elizabeth Warren can't do this alone. And they need people, because with the Democratic platform being what it is, I mean, you and I both know, Rich, that the platform is just a piece of paper. Nobody is bound by the platform. You know, there's nothing written in stone here. I mean, Obama campaigned on so many things that just never happened. They were in the platform. It didn't matter. It didn't happen. So, and which is another huge difference between Canada and the U.S., by the way. So what they're now focused on are the down ballot candidates. And their concern now is that a Donald Trump presidency for the Republicans, for instance, would destroy their chances of winning back the Senate, because we know that he's in a huge fight with Paul Ryan and a number of other bigwig GOP guys running for re-election. And there's a huge, huge risk now, and the GOP are talking about this, that they're going to lose both the Senate and the House of Representatives, and that they're going to be, you know, basically left on the sidings, while the Democrats under Hillary Clinton, we can only assume, will then, you know, take the country in a completely bizarre direction.
Yeah. Did you hear about the statement from Republican Congressman Michael Hanna today?
No.
Michael Hanna is a Republican from Utica, which is about 90 miles, about 150 kilometers northwest of here, mm-hmm. where I live. And I happen to have met him once before in my professional travels. He has actually become the first sitting Republican congressman to say he's going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
He gave every moderate, you know, kind of purple state Republican or even blue state Republican an out. Because he was the first. You can rest assured that Trump is sparred with Kelly Ayotte, who's a moderate senator from New Hampshire, and a number of other people. Because he has sparred with a lot of people, a lot of people are looking for a way away from Trump. And I think this is something you pointed out, and I know probably in the next hour you'll want to get into looking at third parties and whatnot. You're looking at Trump's nature, which I think is the long-term evolution of some very anti-governmentism that has been festering in the Republican Party for 20 years plus, and you can even argue all the way back to the Southern Strategy. But that level of anti-governmentalism is what produced Donald Trump. It's a fundamental lack of understanding of how government works.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's there, and now he's basically running as the I'm not the government guy. Well, all of a sudden, well, guess what, you idiot? You have to be in charge of the government
mm-hmm.
now. And therein lies, I think, the futility of that campaign, which is why you see people like Sanders in particular saying, hey, look, I may not be president, but you know what? If Hillary is president and we expect to get anything progressive done, we need a better ground game, because the Republicans have been kicking our butt since 94 in ground game, particularly in purple states. Now this is a chance, because of the failure of that ground game, for Democrats to pick up the ball and in local elections start winning again, because they have been battered for 20 years in a lot of these local, state, and congressional elections. And this may be their opportunity to pick up that ground game that they've mm-hmm. been lacking for 20 years.
Rich, one of the things, you've used the term purple states a couple of times. Could you just, for our listeners who aren't familiar with this terminology, can you quickly explain what you're talking about, please?
For purple states?
Yes, please. What does that term mean?
And, of course, in the U.S., the conservative or Republicans are red, and the Democrats are blue. So it's sort of a reverse of the Canadian system. So when I say a purple state, it's a state that is not classically or does not by rule vote Republican or Democratic. Good examples that we've been talking about are Virginia, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, in a few other states
So we're talking about swing states then, right?
We're talking about swing states.
Yeah, okay. These are the ones that are up for grabs that are so we've talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay.
Texas will vote Republican, and has for forever. New York has voted every election Democratic since 1988, and that's not going to change anytime soon. Yeah. Those are safe red and blue states. So
I'm going to cut you there, Rick. Sorry, man. Rich, rather. We're going to take our last break of this hour when we come back after the news. So this will take us to probably the top of the hour. If it doesn't, what we're going to do is I'm going to play a track here as well. We're going to play Alice Cooper's 18 in honor of all those people who are voting for the first time in a general election in the United States. Make sure you're registered, folks. Make sure you are at least get a ballot because that has been a problem in this in the primary season anyway. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to The Drive Time. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. My guest on the line, Rich Quartermain. My guest in studio, as always, Rob Washburn, my co-host on Wednesdays. We'll be back after the break.
Step into the pop confabulorium and take a translunary trip to the highs and lows of popular culture.
We'll be talking music and movies turning 20, 30, even 100 years old this week in history.
No hornswoggle or tomfoolery, just a straight-shooting bona fide critical tour through movies and music, both unforgettable and best left forgotten.
Join him,
Aaron,
and myself,
Nathan,
Saturday afternoons from 3 to 5 on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
It's fun
and educational.
And bona fide.
The growing season is upon us, so come out Saturdays from 8 to 1 and experience all that the Port Hope Farmers Market has to offer. Come pick from a variety of fresh local fare or choose from a selection of fine quality meats, cheeses, organic plants, handmade crafts, and more. See you at the Port Hope Farmers Market every Saturday, located behind Town Hall. Or visit our Wednesday market, noon to 5 p.m., at Gilmer's Home Hardware on Toronto Road. Or go to porthopefarmersmarket.ca and like us on Facebook.
I'm here with Ed White, on the job. We're inside my refrigerator, and guess what?
It was a minor repair, well worth fixing, for far less than a new one.
Thanks, Ed. That's Ed White, Appliances, 51 Mill Street South, Port Hope, 885-7109.
Do you like helping out the community? Why not come and volunteer with us here at Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
To get